This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
Alrighty, we got volume. Yay, thanks, Wade. Oh, man. All right, awesome day here at the Reinvention Radio headquarters. By the way, this has just become, Wade, in case you didn't know, this is the Reinvention Radio headquarters. So this is this would be the world headquarters for Reinvention Radio. We're really going to just like we're taking this up a notch. We're going all out. What do you say? Yeah, you're right there with us.
WS World Syndication.
And so, you know, see,
if you need to meet,
you're all about world syndication. I'm all about world domination. Yeah, and see, that works out well.
If you need me to be pinky to your brain,
I am clearly not the brain. There's no doubt at all about that. And man, what an amazing week. And one of my favorite parts of this time of the year is the celebration of someone that a lot of people like celebrating. You remember what did we celebrate on Monday? Remember?
Martin Luther King.
Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. Interestingly enough, do you know when his birthday actually is? Because Monday was January 18th, which is when we actually celebrated his birthday. Do you know when his actual birthday is?
September 15th.
Rich, do you know when his birthday actually is?
It's the weirdest thing. I was actually going to say September 13th. I was just trying to find something far away. So,
no, right. Oh, my God. No, his birthday is January 15th. Okay. So I just have no idea. Like, what? That would have been a Friday. Yeah. So, like, what's the problem?
I think they're just trying to prep all the government stuff, knowing when to close down and all that.
Yeah, but I mean, Friday would be just, it's a 3-day weekend either way. Why not give the man his birthday celebration, like on the actual day of his birth? That would, yep. I'm not an expert, and as you know, I am not the brain of this organization, but if it's me, I'm actually going to celebrate his birthday on his birthday. How would you like it if people celebrated your birthday 3 days later? You know what he's doing right now? He's going, free at last, free. No, man, I still have to deal with this every single year. And it's like, talk about disrespect. See, that's just wrong. We are not honoring the man.
What about when it ends up on a Sunday?
Well, then I think that we should just make the whole week a celebration of his birthday, Sunday through Saturday, if that's the case. It'll be like a leap year. So when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday falls on a Sunday, it'll be like a leap year, right? I mean, like, I think that's the plan. All right, so here's what I have the utmost respect for what he was able to do. I mean, just an absolute powerhouse, obviously, in the annals of our history here as a country. And I did something that that I didn't know I was going to do until I saw this in my email inbox, and I was like, let me check this out. Which is, I want to figure out here based on. And you're coming over here because I did something. What did I do with Blab?
No, you didn't do anything.
I didn't do anything. You're looking at stuff. There's Sark. Yay! Sark is here. That is so awesome. So we're going to have an amazing show here. Sark is here. We're going to bring her on very, very soon. So be patient. She's coming. But one of the things that I did was I looked up the top quotes from Dr. Martin Luther King, because he said, obviously, a lot of amazing things over the years. What's your favorite quote from Dr. Martin Luther King? I'm talking to you, Rich.
I would say, well, I love the I Have a Dream speech, bottom line. So.
And he free-flowed that one. Did you know that?
I heard that later. I didn't know
it. That wasn't his actual speech. He was like, man, he was just rapping from the stage, basically. He just,
oh, that's awesome.
Basically just free-flowed it. All right, so Wade, thinking about Dr. Martin Luther King as you work the boards here, and I'm having you multitask. And when we did that in the last show, I asked you if you were a multitasker or a single tasker. I don't remember. What did you say? You say single tasker or multitasker?
I'm a multitasker.
There you go. Okay, so.
No choice.
All right, so you got things going on in the brain right now. Let's focus on your favorite quote from Dr. Martin Luther King.
Well, sadly, I only know the one famous quote.
Good.
And so, you know.
Now, here's the thing. So we have three white guys sitting around a table talking about Dr. Martin Luther King. You would think that we would know a little bit more, but sadly, we don't. So here's what I did. So I went and I looked up some of the top quotes from Dr. Martin Luther King over time here. There's some amazing things that he said. And honestly, some of these I didn't even know he said, and they're super amazing. All right, so number one, the time is always right to do what is right.
I like that.
Isn't there a time, though, that sometimes, even though it's the right thing to do, you shouldn't be doing it? Or it's the wrong thing to do, but it's the right thing not to do it, so you do it anyway. Yes, exactly. Let's go on to the next quote. All right,
I guess
so
I'm not a multitasker.
All right, this one I love. All right, so don't try to process this. Let's go to the next one. Wait. All right, so darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that.
That's my second favorite. I
interesting,
love
right?
I have that one written.
Which is appropriate because we're talking to Sark today, and we're going to be talking about reinventing wild love, which will be a lot of fun. Actually, bring Sark up right now. So, Sark, you're there, yeah?
Yeah, I'm here, Steve.
Hey, how are you doing? You look amazing, by the way, on Blab. So, very cool.
Thank you.
For those who join us live every Thursday from 12 until 2 Pacific, we are live on blab.im, and we have the lovely Sark with us today. What do you think about, I mean, we're talking about love, obviously, in this episode. What is your take of that particular quote from the doctor himself? That's got to be one of your favorites.
Oh, the light?
The light, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and just, I might be doing something incorrectly because I'm having an echo.
Oh, just try the little speaker thing on the bottom left of your, actually just go ahead.
I just did that, and yep. It made a little X.
Okay, that's exactly right. So do that for all of them. All of them should be X'd, I believe. Is that correct, Rich Ote, the
yes.
Live streaming master? Yeah, okay. So just X them all out. I know it's a little bit funky. We're working it out. And people who listen to the podcast are like, Jesus, every time we listen to the podcast, you guys are talking about technology and what's going on there with Blab. Okay, so darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I would say Sarkness can drive out darkness.
Ah, well, that's a good one. Sarkness can drive out darkness. All right, this happens to be this might be my favorite. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Ooh.
Yes.
What's your take on that, Wade? Well, you're brewing.
I'm thinking, this guy's kind of wise.
This guy is kind of wise.
Definitely
yeah,
wise.
He was definitely a wise dude. Okay, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Okay, this is a good one, too. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter.
Mm. Yeah, you got to take action.
What's your take on that one, Sark?
True.
It's like you can't really argue, especially since he's not here to defend his quotes, but it's true. You can't really argue that one. Okay, how about this? And this goes back to I'm going to hold off on this one because I think this plays in perfectly to what we're going to be talking about in today's episode. So I'm going to come back to that one. But here's another one. Faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. We're here. So faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. What's your take on faith? So what's your take on that particular statement about...
Oh, absolutely. Not being able to see the rest of the staircase and taking that first step, that's all of our opportunity. Mm-hmm. Because you can proceed on evidence only or you can proceed on faith, and you're going to do a lot more proceeding on faith.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy because when you come right down to it, that's all we really have. I mean, we only really have faith in either ourselves or faith in others or faith in a higher power or whatever it might be, that whatever we were looking to do here is going to go as we hope it will. So, forgiveness. Now, this is interesting. So I have this is pretty darn cool. You can't say all the time that you know someone who is a Nobel Peace Prize nominee. Pretty cool, because I actually now can say that I have a friend who was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. And I can assure you it was not White Wade, who just left the building so I can talk about him now that he's gone. But it was my friend Sean DePerrin, she was just nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize because of something that she did called Project Forgiveness, which is pretty cool. And Dr. Martin Luther King was quoted as saying, "Forgiveness is not an occasional act. It is a constant attitude." That's pretty amazing. And when you come right down to it, it's super hard to be forgiving when somebody wrongs you. How do you deal with forgiveness, Sark, when somebody wrongs you?
Well, first, I hate them. but
yeah, well,
but
there you go.
It's as brief as I can make it. You know, I think to honor and acknowledge the feelings you have and then move to consciously forgive is, again, all of our opportunity. But if you try to deny the feelings of upset, it never works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is super hard to be forgiving. Actually, you know who the most forgiving person was that I have ever met in my entire life? Rich, who's the most forgiving person that you ever met in your life, just out of curiosity?
Probably my grandfather.
You know what? That's so funny. That's who it is for me, too. My grandfather was the single most forgiving person that I have ever met. Before he died, I asked him, do you have one piece of advice for me, right? And we just had a little sit down. And he said, yeah, learn to forgive those who have transgressed against you. It doesn't do you any good to hold that. Really powerful. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break. We are going to talk to the one and only Sark here on Reinvention Radio and talk a little bit more about love and reinventing wild love right after this.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What is Your What? Steve Ulcher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right. Welcome back to Reinvention Radio with your host, Steve Ulcher. And we've got Wei Wei in the house along with Rich Otey. Mary Goulet is off doing her fun stuff today, actually doing something probably like feeding the homeless or, you know, something that like really nice people do that I haven't quite wrapped my arms around that whole giving back thing yet. I'm still trying to figure that out. All right. So before the break, we were talking to Sark about all sorts of interesting, fun things here. Not the least of which is some of the quotes that I absolutely love from Dr. Martin Luther King. Okay, so Sark, here's one of the quotes that I love, which is, he said, I have decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear. What's your take on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, hate is exhausting. I mean, I think that, again, we have to feel it, but we don't have to stay there. Some people stay there and build houses there.
Mm-hmm.
And love is really, you know, as we've heard, love is the answer.
Yeah. And so you have a new book out, and I don't want to be the you ever watch Saturday Night Live, Sark?
Strangely, I've not, but I've heard so many great stories about Saturday Night Live that I feel that I have.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Every time Mary is here, my co-host is here, we talk. I'm like, you ever watch it? She's like, no, Mary never watches the Saturday Night Live stuff. So it's all news to her, which is kind of fun. But one of the things that they had a number of years ago on Saturday Night Live, it was a character by the name of Debbie Downer. So like basically you'd have like all of these, you know, fun, happy people hanging out, just kind of talking and, you know, doing the do. And then she'd be like, did I tell you that my brother has cancer? And be like, wah, wah, you know, just like this really like sad kind of thing. And I don't want to be Debbie Downer here, but I do think it's important for you to share what's going on in your life right now. Are you okay to share with what's going on?
Yes, absolutely.
Please do.
Yeah, July 5th, my beloved John, Dr. John Waddell, and I turned in our book to the publisher, and on July 6th, he was in the hospital, never having been sick a day in his life, hearing that he had stage 4 cancer.
Oh, jeez.
And so they didn't expect him to live, so we put the book on hold, and then, but he was doing better a few days later, and I was out at a cafe, and a woman sat next to me, and she said, you know, you have the best energy. And I said, well, thanks a lot. You know, I said, I have a wonderful life. And she said, well, you're probably one of those people that nothing bad has ever happened to.
Ugh.
And I said, well, that's funny that you say that, because my fiancé is in the hospital right now with stage 4 cancer.
Mm.
And she said, how are you like this when that is going on?
Yeah.
And I said, well, we wrote a book that we turned into the publisher just a day before his diagnosis that tells how we're doing that and it's Succulent Wild Love, Six Powerful Habits for Feeling More Love More Often. She said, I want that book. And I said, well, actually, we just put it on hold because we don't know if he's going to make it. And she said, well, he is going to make it, and you need to get that book off of hold, and you need to talk to your publisher right away.
Wow.
And I was kind of shocked. And so I got back to the publisher and said, listen, is there any way you can get us back on the schedule? And they said, well, honestly, we ignored you, and we kept working on the book, and it's done. And they said, we just knew it was going to work out. So this is now almost 8 months later, and John is healing from stage 4 cancer. He's on his healing journey, and he's finding, both of us are finding our joy with stage 4 cancer, too, and we're living these six powerful habits more than we ever knew we would. We already thought we really were living them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you face something like this, you really find out a lot of things. So I'm happy to talk about it. He wanted to be here, by the way. He's in the hospital finishing up a round of chemotherapy. And he said, I can do it. I can get on audio. And I said, honey, you know, it's okay to rest. You know, it's okay not to, you know, so up until an hour ago, he was going to be on.
Wow. You know, and it's interesting, too, because one of the quotes that that we mentioned earlier is faith is taking the first step, even when you don't see the whole staircase, which is a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King, if you're just joining us. And man, talk about having to have faith. First, take us through when that diagnosis was put in front. I mean, take us through that moment. I'm just really curious in terms of what that was like for you, what it was like for him, and that was, what was your conversation after?
Yeah, well, you know, I came skipping into the room thinking we were going to hear that he had some kind of stomach problem that was going to be able to be fixed with a few medications. And the doctor had a terrible look on his face, and I said, oh, F-U-C-K, you know.
You can swear.
I just saw his face.
Yeah.
And he said, it's that kind of situation. He said he has stage 4 metastatic colon cancer. And then I echoed that word and started basically sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
And John was, on the other hand, sitting in bed saying, I wonder why I created this. And I guess I better uncreate it. Now, I have to say, John has a PhD in clinical psychology, but he's also a metaphysical teacher. And he feels that his illness is a solution. Cancer is not an enemy. Cancer has come as a teacher and a guide. And John is now doing deep psychological work about why this has occurred to him. Now, let's just emphasize, this is not everyone's path.
Yeah.
Not everyone needs to believe this. If you're watching and you know someone with cancer, it doesn't mean they created it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you created it or a child created it. I would let John speak more about this, which he does. He teaches brilliantly about his beliefs. So that was John's reaction.
What was
the doctor was kind of blown away by John, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a surgeon who told John that he probably would die in 3 months and he should just go home. And I said, well, how do you know that? And she said, well, I don't know that, but we don't know anything else to do. And I said, well, then don't send people home with a death sentence.
Right. Ugh.
And so, you know, that they call that actually an embedded command.
Mm-hmm.
People hear those things and they just go home to die.
Mm-hmm.
And
then they fulfill that. I mean, it's like, it's the power of, well, you have the power of positive thinking, you have the power of negative thinking, and you have the power of creating your own reality, albeit with extenuating circumstances that, of course, often you can't do anything about. But what was your reaction when you got the news? Obviously, you were very, very upset, but how quickly did that turn and what did that turn into?
Well, it turned pretty quickly into, it was my worst fear. I thought if I ever find big time love, which I had found in John, and, you know, what if they die?
Mm-hmm.
And then second, what if they have a terrible disease and need me to take care of them? So both of those two things occurred. And so I've described it as my biggest fear and my greatest blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it caused me to take a look at how I was living my life and make some significant changes right away. I thought, I don't have time anymore to have these things that aren't working. It was like the diagnosis was this tremendous catalyst for change.
Yeah.
And so I pretty immediately started writing about it and keeping a journal and just writing everything about this healing journey. and changed my business pretty significantly and opened up to a lot more of what I really wanted to teach. It was kind of like I had been in hiding in some ways. I hadn't really come out with what I really wanted to do, and John's diagnosis helped me do that. So, and it's an honor and a privilege to take care of him, and I've learned how to be a caregiver and also be a self-loving caregiver, which I have a lot to share about because some people don't know how to take care of themselves while they, most people actually don't know how to fully take care of themselves while taking care of another.
Mm-hmm. How much do you, because we were talking about this in the last show with Luis, and it's really interesting to see how people deal with adversity, right? And the last guest, if you're just tuning in to the podcast here and you didn't listen to Reinventing Adversity, you definitely want to check that out because his story is absolutely amazing. But one of the questions that I like asking, especially when this sort of ugliness kind of bears its head here, what is your take on nature versus nurture? Because you have to deal with life as it comes up, but a lot of that is from what you learn. Like, you've surrounded yourself with amazing people, from the Wayne Dyers to the, you know, Esther Hicks to the Marcy Shimoffs, etc. So you've learned a lot of this, but how much do you think of who you are now was ingrained versus what you've learned by being around amazing people?
Oh, very good point. I would say a lot is by the people we surround ourselves with, for sure. But also, I think my relationship with what I would call my inner wise self, this is the part that everybody has inside that's bigger, wiser, older than anything. You know, it's everyone has this inner wise self. You might call it Holy Spirit, pure positive energy, higher self. Most people know they have it, mm-hmm. but they're not necessarily consulting with it about everything in their life. Mm-hmm. So this inner wise self was right there at that diagnosis, and it's been there for every day of these 8 months. And without that inner guidance, and no matter who's on the outside of you, if you don't have that inner guidance, it's going to be pretty tough.
Mm-hmm. And do you think most people have that inner guidance if they tap into it, or is that something that you have to call out for and bring in?
You do have to call out for it and bring it in, but people think they sort of wait until something like this happens. Oh, I would call on my higher self if I ever got a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, or if I ever was in a terrible car accident, and that's fine. But people realize that you can call on it for everything in your life right now, and then it builds that communication between you and your inner wise self, so that it's right there.
Yeah, so here's what we're going to do. We are going to have to take a little break here. We'll bring Sark back in. Just a little problem with the audio there, but we'll bring Sark right back in. But after the break, what I want to do is I want to talk about the new book, Succulent Wild Love, which is just such an amazing name for a book. I mean, when you come right down to it, isn't that what everybody really wants? Or at least I think that's what most people really want. And so, yeah, there you go, Wade. Just give Rich the mic. But now we go to break just as soon as you bring him on. All right, we're going to be right back after this with more Reinvention Radio and Sark and Succulent Wild Love as we reinvent wild love here on Reinvention Radio. More right after this.
Born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Ulsher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio with your host, Steve Ulsher, along with, well, we used to have Rich Ote there, and Rich Ote is somewhere to be found, but not on Blab, evidently. And there he is, he's back. And Wait Wait and Mary Goulet is somewhere to be found as well. And right now we are talking to the one and only Sark. By the way, did you embrace that when people started calling you Sark, or were you just kind of like, no, it's Susan, just let's just leave it at Susan? How did that come about?
Well, it was 1982, and my mentor at the time, Henry Miller, who had written many incredible books, came into a dream, and he said, your name will be Sark, and your artwork will be famous before your writing.
Wow.
And I thought, that's a dumb name. I'm not going to have that name. And I wrote the dream down in a journal and put it aside, and he came back 2 weeks later in another dream and said, your name will be Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, I like that. I'm going to add Ariel Rainbow to my name and make it legal. So I went to court, and they said, is there anyone here who knows why this woman should not be named Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy? And then that's when I realized it's spelled Sark.
Oh, so you didn't even realize it at the time. Oh, that's funny.
No.
That's funny. You know, when I, in my book, What Is Your What? Discover the One Amazing Thing You Were Born to Do, there's a shameless plug, which just, you know, hit the New York Times list back in 20, whatever it was. That's another shameless plug. I wrote this, one of the sections is called The Seven Life-Altering Principles. And it wasn't until, I don't know, maybe a year or two after I wrote it, that I was like, ooh, der, the seven life-altering principles, the acronym for that is the SLAP. which is exactly what it is, because it's like, you know, this, you know, we don't do a real good job of teaching people how to live. We teach them how to read and write and do some math, which, you know, of course is kind of useless in most of the scheme of things, but we don't teach people how to live, which is what the seven life altering principles were all about. Anyway, it stands for the SLAP. So it wasn't until you said it out loud, we were like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's that's
Yeah, and now here's another shameless plug. I enjoyed your book a great deal, Steve.
Oh, thank you for that. That is so sweet. And coming from you, I mean, really, that is, I'm honored. So thank you for that. So let's talk about books for a second. And I want to get into Succulent Wild Love. And obviously, if we had Richard here, it would be, you know, just John. I'm calling Richard because I'm looking at Richard here. If we had John here, that would be you know, even that much better. You, John, maybe Richard, you can take John's spot here and just talk about the book and how you co-wrote it with Sark. But no, I want to actually go way, way, way back to when you first started writing. There's a lot of people who have a book in them, but they will never get the book out. What was that conversation going on like in your mind where you knew you had something to say and you knew that you had to get it out and you wouldn't listen to the little voice that was telling you you can't?
Yes. Well, I was Minneapolis, Minnesota, 10 years old, wonderful childhood, but there was also abuse. And to escape the abuse, I made best friends with a man in the neighborhood who was 80 years old. His name was Mr. Boggs. And we became very close friends, and he got really sick and went in the hospital. And my mom told me he probably wouldn't make it back out. And I said, well, then I need to write him something every day he's in there so he knows how loved he is. And after a month of this, he got out of the hospital, and he said to me, I think you saved my life. He said, no one else called or wrote while I was in there, and I had to get out to see you. And I said to came ran in the house and said to my mom, I'm supposed to be a beacon of hope that writes books for the world. And she said, eat your peanut butter sandwich. But that was the start for me. I thought, if I could do that for Mr. Boggs, what might I be able to do for the world? And 17 books later, that's what's happened.
Yeah, and you're a prolific writer. And a lot of people have trouble, you know, they have, I think most people have one book in them. Most people, I'm going to say, probably don't have 17. So as you look back on that trajectory of writing, what was that favorite sort of period of time? Obviously, I mean, let's take the current book out of the equation. As you look back, what has been that favorite period of writing for you, and why do you think you were really in the groove at that time?
Well, before I answer that, I want to reassure everyone who hears prolific and 17 books that I didn't write a word from 10 years old till 35.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I wrote a word, but I didn't publish anything. And it wasn't until after I actually attempted suicide, resulting from all of this abuse in my childhood, and got some really good therapy and some support, that I turned to let those books out. So then I wrote a book a year. You know, I decided I'd wasted, you know, I'd spent enough time not writing. What might happen if I really focused and let the writing out? And so I think that first book, you know, A Creative Companion, I wrote it in 2 weeks, and it was crooked and it was odd looking, and I didn't see how anything could ever happen with it. Mm-hmm. And then I met with the publisher, and they said, we have to publish this exactly like it is. And I said, good, because I'm not changing anything. And I just knew. And so that book came out, and I started getting letters from all over the world. I was getting 10,000 letters a month. I had written in the back, send me something from your heart. Mm. And everyone did. And I had bins and bins of incredible, unbelievable things that people sent me.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that first book.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because when you come from that sort of childhood where you have that concern about, am I good enough? Am I deserving? And those sort of accolades start to pour in. That had to feel pretty foreign to you. And did you embrace all of that positivity, or did it take you quite some time until you realized, Jesus, maybe I am actually what they are saying I am?
Well, I think thanks to a great therapist, I learned that neither the complaints or the compliments are my business.
Mm. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
So I learned how to be that positive person from inside me, and again, that inner wise self. It's the inner wise self that really saved me through all those years of abuse. I didn't call it that then, but that part was there. I was being guided and protected by myself,
mm-hmm.
and so that's what I would say.
You know, and it's interesting because early on we were talking about some of the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. quotes, and one of the ones that I mentioned earlier was the darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. How did you come out of the darkness? I mean, I was there over a couple of years ago now, but I was there. And when you're in that dark place, it's A, number one, very, very scary, but B, being able to see the light when you're in that darkness and then recovering from that is, for some people, unfortunately, not something they're able to do. How were you able to do that? Again, through the therapy,
well, again,
or was there something stronger?
Well, I think therapy was definitely one of the big guides, and then I think as my inner wise self and the self-love work I was able to do, and the habits that I began, that I developed and lived and then put in this new book, Succulent Wild Love, are really what allowed me to be able to have buoyancy, to be able to go into the dark and then come back out of the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do need to go into these dark places, but we're not meant to stay there. And so that's the part where people get stuck. And, you know, I have so much compassion and understanding for that. And I always remind people, remember, you have to go into the darkness, but you can bring a flashlight.
Yeah. You got a question, Rich?
Yeah. I was wondering earlier, you were mentioning you feel the hate. First you hate them, then you just let it go. And I was wondering, what's that first step for someone that's in that dark place just to just get started? Not everybody can even afford a therapist. Some people will have a hard time affording their rent.
Oh, I couldn't have afforded a therapist. I lived for 10 years on barter and trade. And after I attempted suicide, I called the suicide prevention line. And a woman there said to me, do you really want to die, or did you just want the pain to end? And I said, I just wanted the pain to end. And she said, well, get yourself some therapy. And I said, well, I don't have any money. And she said, well, there's programs. And so sure enough, there was a program, and it was a sliding scale, and I paid $5 a week for that first therapist. And I built my way up from there. But, you know, and there are even free services that are not $5. So, I mean, there is always a way to reach out and get different types of help. And that's what I would want people to know.
Yeah. What does it mean to be a succulent wild woman? If you go to planet-sark.myshopify.com, of course you can go other places as well, but that's where your shopping page is, and you've got this great poster. I just wanted to start with that as we get into more discussion around the book. What to you does it mean to be a succulent wild woman?
Yes. Well, you know, that book that I published, Succulent Wild Woman, in 1997, I think 1996 or so, I was on a sidewalk in San Francisco, and etched into the cement, someone had written, succulence is powerful. And I jumped on top of that square, and I said, yes, it is, and I am a succulent wild woman, and I'm going to write about that. And then I collapsed on the ground and thought, all the inner critics started up about why I could never do that. But that was my statement of self-liberation, and this new book, Succulent Wild Love, is my statement of relationship liberation.
Mm-hmm.
I'd always been scared to get involved with someone. I thought they would try to tame me, they would try to stop me, they would change me. I'd had other relationships where I'd kind of let myself get taken over by the relationship.
Sure.
So I was so excited to meet John and find a completely different type of person to be with.
Yeah. Being a succulent wild woman. That's just like of all the words I think in the English, you know, dictionary, whatever, succulent just like is like that's just like one of those words.
I love that word.
That's just a great word. And loving, of course. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then let's let everyone know what a succulent is. For those of you that don't know, a succulent, of course, is a plant, but it's a plant that nourishes itself from the outside and feeds itself so that in that way it's self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we're really made to be, like full cups of self-love, sharing the overflow with the world. But you can only do that if you give to yourself, if you know how to nourish and sustain yourself. So in that way, that's what succulent is to me. And then, of course, wild is untamed.
Mm-hmm.
We're meant to be who we really are, not some approximation, not some facade.
Yeah.
You know, we're meant to be who we really are. So the succulent and the wild, and then you put it with love, and that describes the...
Yeah.
I mean, really, John and I married our... He brought in three core teachings to my life, and I brought in three to his, and we married those into the six powerful habits.
Yeah, awesome. So let's talk about those six powerful habits for feeling more love more often in your book, Succulent Wild Love, as we come back now with Sark right after this on Reinvention Radio.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step-by-step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio. Here's your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio with your host, Steve Olscher, along with White Wade and Ritote in the house, and Mary Goulet will be joining us next time. So for all of you who have been rating and reviewing and subscribing to the podcast, we say thank you very much. Don't we all say thank you, gentlemen?
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you very much. And definitely appreciate that, the love, the support, as we crank up the iTunes charts there, which is very cool. So thank you for that. If you want to see a particular guest, if you have a question, or if you maybe you want your brother to be on the show, right, Rich? Because I know that there's like we'll keep it sort of nepotistic, right? We'll just keep all the people we love on the show, like Sark, who we have on the show today. And but if you want to see somebody on the show, or if you had a question about a show or a comment about a past show, 1-844-MRBOLD1. That's 1-844-MR-BOLD1, and we will get to those comments and questions in a future episode. Today we are joined by the absolutely incredible Sark. So, all right, we have to do this because I need to talk about the Succulent Wild Love book, because this is brand new for you guys. This is what you created with Dr. John. And the six powerful habits for feeling more love more often. What an amazing subtitle, by the way, and an amazing title. But let's talk about first run us through the first. What are the six? And let's talk about one or two before unfortunately we hit the top of the hour. But let's run through what the six are, and then let's dig deep on one or two.
Yep. Well, first I just want to say too, this is a whole new philosophy of love and relationships for everyone. So first one is inner wise self. You've heard me talk about it. It's really your biggest relationship mentor inside. Second habit is your inner feelings care system. Most people don't know how to care for their feelings consistently and lovingly, so they just try to avoid and repress them, and then feelings get larger and louder. Then we have inner critic transformation system. Again, most people have inner critics, negative dialogue inside their heads, and they don't know how to care for that those parts of themselves. And so then they're actually fighting with inner critics, and they think they're fighting with their partner. Then the fourth habit, which is one of my favorites, which is the joyful solutions. This is where you go beyond compromise and sacrifice into joyful solutions where everyone gets what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And that was huge for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then something we call beautiful boundaries and self-lovingly separate. This is how you can be wild in the succulent, wild relationship and be yourself and still be loved fully by another.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sixth habit is really unconditional love, how to do it, how to see everyone as perfect, including yourself. And that doesn't mean you don't have preferences, and that doesn't mean you don't have faults and flaws.
Mm-hmm.
It just means you see the essential perfection of yourself and other people. So those are the six habits.
Yeah. Wow. So here's where I have difficulty, and it's so funny because this is a story. So my wife and I have been married now for 18 years, and it's so funny because, like, we have these things that happen to us over the years, and we just kind of keep bringing them back. Our kids used to watch SpongeBob quite a bit when they were little, and we'll just quote SpongeBob to each other quite often. It's kind of funny. It's an inside thing. But anyway, the one of the things that we say to each other is we heard that we used to have a multi-tenant house, and so we lived on the top and there was tenants below us. One day when we were coming home and we were going up the steps, there was one of the tenants who was on the phone outside talking to whoever her boyfriend was or whatever it was, and basically she was going through this whole dissertation about why they just can't be together, and she then broke out in song and basically just said, "I've got to be me." And it's just like, it's one of those things where, like, to this day, where something happens and, like, you know, we kind of get down on each other, we go like, "Look, I've got to be me," you know. It's just, it's kind of one of those funny little things here. But how do you encourage people to maintain that independence and still be me, but be part of a succulent, wild, loving relationship that involves somebody else?
Well, exactly. I mean, I had never lived with anyone until John. I mean, I'd had many lovers, but I'd never let any of them move in. And John moved in a month after we met.
Wow.
And I was terrified that I would get tamed, or that I would lose my wildness, or I wouldn't be able to be me. So, you know, that's the opportunity to develop interdependence. You know, we want to be close with others. We want intimacy, but we also want to be self-lovingly separate.
Mm-hmm.
So we take people through these processes in the book, and we have awareness practice sheets at the end of each chapter. We also have them independently so they can be downloaded and practiced with. And then we really are able to mentor through the book, and, you know, it's a process to really know how to love yourself fully so that you can really then love another. And some people try to skip this step and just love the other. And then that's when they start saying, "I don't feel like I'm myself. I feel like I'm losing myself. Who am I now? I was this fun person before, and now I'm this crabby, uptight person."
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely some work for everyone to do.
So if you had just a couple of quick tips for when you hit that point in your relationship where you're just kind of like, am I better off on my own, or am I better off staying in this coupling? Do you have a couple of quick tips that you got for, I mean, what should people be thinking about when they're getting into that place? And frankly, you know, it can be a very scary place, especially if you've been with somebody for quite some time.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's why we wrote this book, frankly, because we will show you, I mean, honestly, in the book, if you want a succulent wild love relationship, you will not ever get to that point. And that's what I was so happy to show. I mean, this is the book that I wanted through all those relationships that I got to that point and didn't have any guidance.
It's funny, right? In author land, you can appreciate this. They say you write the book that you most need, right? So, it's so funny. Yep.
Yeah. And so, you know, again, it goes back to self-love. It goes back to these six habits. If you're practicing your feelings care, you're not going to be putting those feelings onto someone else. You're not going to be saying, "You're the reason I feel bad."
Mm-hmm.
You're going to take responsibility for your feelings, and you're going to know how to care for your feelings. That clears up more than, I don't know, 75% of problems.
Sure.
And people just have these sort of misguided habits, and they haven't been shown. And so it's very exciting when you see people apply these habits and start to say, wow, I don't have any problems in my relationship anymore. Or if I do, I know how to handle them.
Are you? Let me ask you this. Are you more scared of the couples that fight like crazy in front of you, or are you more scared of the couples that say, we have never had a fight?
It depends. I mean, some people who've never had a fight are repressing, but some people, you know, it depends on when, what cycle in their life, where they are in their personal development.
Mm-hmm.
Some people really do find other people to just mellow out with and be with,
mm-hmm.
and don't deal with a lot of conflict. Other
yeah.
people have sort of a high pitch of energy. I mean, you know, I don't think you can say that either one is the way,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, for sure.
But I can say I was someone that had a list about every single guy. My younger brother used to say, what's on this list for this guy? And I would mm-hmm. reel off, you know, three or four things that he should change so that I would feel better.
Right.
And I'm so happy to say I'm listless now. I have John. There's no list on John.
Wow, that's amazing. All right, let's do this. I want to give you ample time here to plug the book and tell people where they can go. So where can people find out more information about you, the amazing Sark, and, of course, the book, Succulent Wild Love?
Oh, we'll go right to planetsark.com, and you'll see some wonderful photos of John and I, and you'll be able to get these free, wonderful writings called Love Sparks, and those are incredible, I must say. And then those wonderful sheets that I talked about, the awareness practice sheets, you'll be able to find those there. And then the book, which has 178 pieces of original art, and I'm so proud of it. And we have fonts. I write in one font, which is handwritten. John writes in another, which is regular typeset.
Yeah.
And then we have a third voice, which is the narrator. And people are having a lot of fun, feeling very engaged with the book. There's also a lot of photos and a great deal of personal stories.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. Well, I really, 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 really wish your man the absolute best. Our prayers, our thoughts are with him, and we're so blessed to have you as a part of our life, and on, you know, on behalf of Rich and Mary and Wade and all of us here at Reinvention Radio, we send our best to you guys. Wish you nothing but amazing things with Succulent Wild Love, and really do appreciate you being here on Reinvention Radio. And we will talk to you guys next week, Thursdays, 12 to 2 p.m. Pacific. I'm Steve Ulcher. See you later.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Ulcher, visit reinventionradio.com.